2025 is going to make or break Mike Norvell's tenure at Florida State. And that's what we're here to talk about today. I know it's 2024, George. We still got two more games left this season, but it's a wash, man. We are really ready to just get this thing over with and get focused on 2025. We're more focused on the fixing the problem than continuing to kind of make it through the season. But we're going to have a good discussion today, a real candid discussion on how 2025 is going to be one of the most pivotal years in Florida State history, one of the most pivotal years in Mike Norvell's tenure. And for that conversation, I have recruited my good friend George from the Renegade Report here on YouTube, Renegade Report 1 on X, to come and have this conversation with me because, you know, George does a really great job over there at the Renegade Report. And I thought we could combine forces to have a great conversation on this today because, George, I feel like, man, this is really one of the things that's on the minds of all of Florida State, all of Seminole Nation right now, where it's like, look, we know this year sucks, but what's the future going to look like? This year's already a wash. What is the future going to look like? And that's what we're here to talk about today. So thank you so much for joining me, my friend, and I'm ready to get into this one.
And I'll tell you what, it's like we're on board the Titanic and we can see the iceberg 2 miles away, but we have no idea how much of it is underwater and how far it goes, you know, and if we're going to be able to get around it. So definitely a good conversation. And there's a million, you know, places to start, from coaches to the quarterback you're going to have. So, yeah, we'll try to do our best with it. And, you know, this season can't be over quick enough. I think it was the worst time bye week in the history of college football, or at least for FSU fans, to have 14 days just to stew on all this stuff. But the rumors are abound, you know, some people saying this offensive coordinator is already hired behind the scenes. You have Mike Alford's comments about the future of the program, like we talked about before we went on the show with the general manager, how much responsibility he's going to have. You've got the house settlement that's going to take effect in the next couple years. That's going to affect everything. So, yeah, ton to talk about and, yeah, figure out what the plan is and what could possibly go right or wrong for 2025 is, I think it's fresh on everybody's mind.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, like you said, this midway through the season, you're just kind of like, gosh, can it just get over and be done with? And that's where we're at now. But now you're close enough to the end that, you know, once that clock strikes zero against Florida, you're on the clock. You are now that 2024 or 2025 offseason is going to be massive for this program. You got coaches to hire, a staff to overhaul. You got a portal to go get and all these players. You got to infuse this roster with some talent. Like you said, there's some future changes with the house settlement and off the field staff that's going to come too. So we're going to get into all that today. My plan is to kind of come in here and we're going to talk about why 2025 is so pivotal for this program and Mike Norvell. And then we're going to talk about the how they can get this right and what happens if they don't. And so before we jump into that, let me bring a quick word from today's sponsor. That's Alumni Hall FSU. These guys have been rocking with us for a few years now. We appreciate their support. They got all the great FSU gear that you guys want. It is Seminole Heritage Week. They have all the turquoise gear if you're interested in that. 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee, as well as online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% on code SPEAR. Save a little bit of money. Give it to the NIL Collective because we all need that help right now. But yeah, man, so let's dive into this here. So, you know, I think, George, we're probably on the same page here when we get into this conversation that 2025 is going to be a massive year for Mike Norvell. I think we talked about this last night on the Voice of College Football show with Mark Rogers. We appreciate him having us on there. We kind of touched on this last night that we both believe he's got about 2 years to get this right. He's got really, this is his one chance to overhaul this staff. But that comes with the caveat that it can't look like this next year. If it does look like this again next year, they're probably going to pull the plug and they're probably going to have to just wipe the slate clean and start over. So I think we're all kind of on the same belief that next year can't look like this year, but as long as it looks better, you got at least 2 years to kind of get this thing right. And, you know, I'm of the belief that the best outcome for Florida State is not to pay a $50+ million buyout, not to bring in a brand new staff and then have to fire them and buy them out too, and then bring in another new staff in 2026. You're going to lose another recruiting class because we know the 2025 class is already basically done. It's not good. It's going to get worse. And then you would kind of be kneecapping your 2026 class as well. At the same time, we can't stay here. We cannot continue to flounder. You cannot have seasons like this at Florida State, where you should be one of the top programs in all of college football. That buyout money would be much better spent putting that into NIL funds to stock this roster with talent, because Mike Norvell has won with a talented roster before. I think that's your best outcome. But you cannot stay where you're at. You can't do it. And so if 2025 looks like 2024, not that you won or lost, that you just look like the most incompetent team in college football, you're going to have to make a change. And, you know, and I'll throw it back to you with this, but I think that you, in a perfect world, you at least want to get back to being competitive for the next 2 years, because, and we'll expand on this conversation, but that 2 years would allow the stadium renovations to be done, the football-only facility to be completed. You'd have more clarification on where you're at as far as ACC and conference realignment. Plus, I think if they end up having to fire Mike Norvell, there's no choice but to go try and get a big-name, powerful head coach, a proven head coach. You can't do this again with like a Willie Taggart situation or a Mike Norvell situation, kind of taking a chance. That taking over a team, a program with all those projects completed, maybe you're in one of the Power Two conferences, and a 7-ish, 8 win team would be a lot easier sell to bring in a big name head coach to take this thing over. So, man, give me some thoughts on that, and then we'll get into the why 2025 is so important for the current staff that we have.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like I said last night, I don't think you, like, even if Mike Norvell tried to bomb next season, I don't think you're ever going to win 1 or 2 games. I think this was a unique, historic kind of drop off from losing 5 years worth of guys they built up, redshirt seniors, guys that were in their 6th, 7th year even. You know, we had people from 2019, 22 to 23 on that team that all left at one time. I think it's not so much like, I think there's two different ways you could win 6 games. And he could be fired or he could be kept. I think you kind of look at Billy Napier and the situation Florida was going into this year. I think if you told any Florida fan that you were going to be 5-4 or whatever they are right now, 5-5, that he would be gone. Yep. But what did he get right? Which parts did he get right? Okay, he got the quarterback. And you can see the vision for the future. They have rocks to build around with the young offensive linemen and defensive linemen and linebackers that they've brought in the past 2 classes. So I think that's a number one. If you're going to be successful in 2025, you're going to have to find your quarterback that can come in and win those games, and then you can project out towards the future. That's going to be a real big part of it. But, you know, I'm worried, but I also, you know, I feel pretty positive. But it's just one of those things, and it's why it's so hard to talk about it and has been until we can find out who the coaches are going to be that are going to come in. I think there's a philosophical change that has to happen and just has to be shown. Like, you look at 2021, that would be a good example of a year that I think could happen and you could move forward and be happy with Mike Norvell. But, yeah, it's just – it's not so much how many wins you get, but it's going to be how it looks. Yeah. If it looks like we're on the same exact road that we were in 2020 and 2021, and it's going to take another 2 or 3 years, then yeah, you levy that into, okay, we got 5 or 6 wins. It's going to be a lot easier to hire a coach. But do you want to bring in all these new coordinators and then fire them after 1 year? Like, yeah, that looks terrible. It's going to make it that much harder to hire a coach. With the playoff system the way it is, with the ACC the way it is, with the house settlement, all these things, I think they just need to show a concerted effort to adjust and change and have some messaging of getting the job done. I just, regardless of what happens, if they send the same message and keep saying the same things and we see the same offense, same defense come out, I don't think anybody's going to have faith. Like, they need to take some swings.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's kind of my beginning point on what I look at for next year and how it could be successful. But yeah,
no, I agree, man. And I think the Florida example is really good because you saw like the Lagway was the one thing that was going to save Napier's job. And then, you know, I don't ever wish a kid to get hurt, but with Graham Mertz having a season ending injury, that probably ended up saving Napier's job because he, they had already started rotating in, you know, the new quarterback, but now they didn't have a choice with Lagway, so they had to play him. And then, you know, I was at I went to the Georgia-Florida game a couple weeks ago, and I was like, man, I will give it to them. The one thing about Florida is they're still playing hard. you know, and then they go beat LSU. And so, like, I know when they announced that extension, a lot of Florida fans, a friend of mine that covers Florida that I'm going to probably have on next week, they were pissed. They did not want him to stay. But, man, I just think, like, you see the positive direction that they're headed. And that's where I think, like you said, man, I think they cannot sell the same message. They have to bring in, like, I've said this repeatedly. Now, Florida State has a stink on this program, and you have to get that off. You have to completely be like, yeah, we effed this up. Now we have a direction and a mindset on how we're going to get better. And don't get me wrong, I'm with you, man. Like, I like Mike Norvell as a person. I don't really know him personally, but I think he's a nice guy. You know, his open media access is great for us as outlets. I think that's a good thing too. I'm rooting for him to succeed because he is our current head coach. But this program is bigger than any one person. And if he can't get the job done, he needs to go. But I'm all for him fixing it. I think the problem right now is that 2024 has been so terrible. This isn't like we went from 13 to 6 or 5 wins or something like that, or just made a crap bowl game. This has been a fall of epic proportions. This is one of the biggest fall offs in winning percentage that in like college football history. And so because that, Norvell has lost basically all of his goodwill among the fan base, also known as your donors to your NIL, your boosters, things like that. He's lost a lot of trust. He's made this program really the laughing stock of college football. And that's going to hurt with all the things you need to get back successful. The 2025 recruiting class is a perfect example of that. This was supposed to be a transformational class. This was supposed to be someone where coming off the back of a 24-win stretch over two seasons, you were going to have that class, that one that finally broke the top 10. And it was a really good class at one point in the season. And then it has just completely fallen apart. And now you're having to completely reset your staff year 5. And you're going to have to depend on the portal to infuse this roster with talent again. So it just feels like we're back where we started, you know, and this is the same thing that they fired Willie Taggart for. They said in year 2 and game, you know, whatever it was, 16, 18 or whatever, it looked like game 2. And so they pulled the trigger on getting rid of him. So again, like you said, man, at the end of next year, no matter what the win total is, it has to look better, because if it doesn't, your schedule is a little, and I'm going to get into this in a little bit, but your schedule is a little bit easier next year than it is in 24 and 26. So you could still win 5 or 6 games and it not look great. So like you said, man, I think the offense has to make some big adjustments there too. Now, one of the things I want to talk about next is kind of why I believe this can be turned around a little bit in 2025, but why it has to be done quickly, why next year is so crucial for Mike Norvell. Because I do believe it can be done quickly. Some of the examples I'm going to give after this, look, they're good examples, but none of them are as bad as what we're seeing this year from Florida State, right? But we've seen these swings in the past. We talked about this on that show last night. You know, Brian Kelly had a down year at Notre Dame. He went from 10 wins to 4 wins, right back to 10. Jim Harbaugh had a down year at Michigan, 9 wins, down to 2 wins, back to 12, won a national championship a few years later. James Franklin at Penn State, 11 wins, down to 4, back to 7, then back to 11. And even Pat Narduzzi at Pitt went from 11 to 9, down to 3, and then back to 7 so far this year. Now, I do want to provide some clarification on that Pitt. People really apparently hate this example that I use of Pitt. We are not Pitt. We are not trying to be Pitt. Don't misconstrue my words about Pitt. We are not trying to have one good season every 3 to 4 years. The point is, one good offseason can flip a program. That's the whole point. Because all of these examples that I just named, they all happen at least 5 years into that coach's tenure. All of them resulted in change being made. And the commonality among all of them is that it was a 1-year blip on the radar, and then things got back to normal within 1 to 2 years. So the point of that is, this season is going to be a scar that will live on forever. But as we get farther away from this, if the success returns, then I think that scar will eventually fade away. So give me some thoughts on like how one good offseason could change this program and get it back on track, but why it's so important that it has to only be a 1-year thing. Because if this drags on, then you get into that lame duck coach situation and you know a change is going to have to be made.
You said this isn't Pitt, you know. We know Mike Norvell can take 3 years, 4 years, and get you, you know, close to the promised land. But you don't have 3 or 4 years. You've got right. 1 year. You mentioned Jim Harbaugh. What did he do when that happened? They clean house. he completely changed his philosophy of football. Like, he had gotten away from what he did in the NFL, and they had spread it out more, doing different things. What did he do? He hired different coaches, and he said, okay, we're concentrating on the lines of scrimmage, and we're going to pound the rock, and we're going to play Jim Harbaugh football. And they got back to their thing. Somebody who didn't even, like Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, it's not like they fell off the planet Earth. But if you listen to him talk this offseason, he's like, man, I learned a lot. I figured out, you know, once we got close, that I've got to recruit the defensive line different out of the portal and high school. Like, regardless of what I do with my wide receivers and my offense and my quarterback, what scheme you run on defense, you just have to have those guys. It doesn't matter what you have to pay them or what you have to tell their mom and dad. You got to get those guys on the campus. And that's kind of, to me, that's the flip that Mike has to flip. It's also what worries me the most, because the messaging coming out of these press conferences and everything is that, you know, we're doing everything right. They're working hard. They just, you know, have reacted wrong and things of that nature. It's just things have got to change a bit. I love the values. I loved the culture. I argue with people said we had a culture problem because of what happened at UGA and following. You know, that stuff was true. It came out. You know, it's almost like you preach from the Bible, all these things, and then something happens in somebody's life. Like, okay, well, God, why did you take my son? And then they lose faith.
Right.
It seems like that's what happened to this entire football team after that snub, and then to an even larger degree after you lose to Georgia Tech. Because, you know, as bad as that Georgia Tech game was, if this team played like that all year, we'd have 3 or 4 wins at least, you know. So can they make that flip? Mark made a great comment last night when I kind of took this route. Like, they break down into prayer groups. They're big. Mike's Christian faith and family values are a big part of this program. And I love all that stuff. But when Jesus was walking around on earth, he wasn't hanging around with the people that had their lives together.
Yeah.
He was hanging out with the people that needed him, that were lost, you know, the blind person or, you know, the prostitute, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's a little bit of that. You have to just go where the talented people are. I'm not saying bring in evil people or anything like that, but you've got to expand your scope and be willing to do things. In the business world, if you try to just be a perfect, you know, kind of moral person, morally ambiguous, you're not going to make it. There's something to be said about needing to be a soldier when it's time to go to war and do what's necessary.
Right.
So, you know, without getting to specifics of certain players and things of that nature, I think that mindset has to change, and you have to signal that kind of, you know, to your fan base, to your boosters, to, you know, everything. And to go back to the quarterback part, that's kind of, to me, the biggest key in this, because, you know, that can give you faith. You see what UF is, as mad as they are about Napier, they couldn't be more hyped about Lagway. And it's the one position on the field, as we found out by losing Jordan Travis. And if you go look at any of the stats, even in 20 and 2023, when he wasn't there, it got you in trouble. What got you in trouble this year was thinking you were going to bring DJU in and it was going to have anywhere near the same effect on the offensive line.
Yeah.
These guys have to figure out, they got to find the quarterback first thing, but when they're building their offensive line and defensive line and bringing their guys into the portal, they got to take that out of it. These guys got to be able to block with a cinder block back there at quarterback. If there's a cinder block just sitting there with a cone on top of it, they need to be able to give it 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And they need to be able to open up actual, you know, holes. And, you know, I think they can. I think there's an ability to do that. You talked about, you know, there's been rumors that this much money was on the table already for the buyout after that Notre Dame game and things of that nature. Say $20 million was sitting there. Boosters were ready to make a move. They just needed to finish it. Okay, well, throw 20 at the battle's end on top of the, you know, $15 million, $18 million budget that they already have. And just go pay double for these defensive ends that you need, the offensive tackle you need. Be willing to overpay. We're not too good for that. Just make a clear show of faith that you're going to do everything humanly possible. Adjust, back off from play calling if you have to, because that's what it's going to take. And, you know, it remains to be seen. But it's, again, why we can't wait for this thing to end, this season to end, so we can actually, you know, see what they do. You know, little things like it taking week 10 to make Lawrence Sofili running back one. You know, the linebackers not having any idea to do what to start the season. you're in week 10 and you're still rushing four guys on every single third down. Like, I'm not going to act like I'm the best X's and O's guys, but if I'm an offensive coordinator and third and long comes up, it's pretty easy to drop a play when you know exactly what's coming. Like, it was one thing when you have Jared Verse, Braden Fisk, et cetera, on your freaking defensive line. We don't have that. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, regardless of what you get in, like, there needs to be a legitimate change, because Mike Norvell's philosophy is one of a, you know, and what we saw in the beginning, we don't have time to do that again. So yeah, it's tough. It's going to be, we've got to take some chances almost. It feels like, regardless of whether he wants to or not. And he's young, like, he's super young. I totally believe he could do it. We had a conversation off air, a heated one, me, Tiny Hat, and Deshaun, about like Lane Kiffin. Okay, Lane Kiffin is the top name everybody wants right now. If we fool around and lose to Charleston Southern, FSU boosters are going to be raising money to try and talk him into coming over here. And we've all said for, you know, years on our program that he'd crawl over broken glass to get to one of these Florida Power Five programs, be it Miami, Florida, or FSU. So what happened with Lane Kiffin 15 years ago?
Yeah.
He's at Tennessee for a year. He didn't get fired, but, you know, it's completely just incestuous, just crazy stuff going on over there. So he leaves on the tarmac, goes to USC, flames out, gets fired off the tarmac over there at UFC. And that's all after failing at Oakland. And he goes and refines himself. And now he's the top of the world again. He's like the hottest coaching candidate. So I have all the faith in the world that Mike can change, can get back. But we don't have time for that process to happen at Florida State.
Right. Oh, man. I think you hit on so many great points there that some of these I want to go back and touch on, because and Lane Kiffin is a great example, because like you said, man, you look at pre-Ole Miss, even coming off of the Alabama days when he was still a hot commodity as a coordinator, I don't think I wanted that sideshow mentality, kind of like Dion. You know, I don't want that whole sideshow that comes with it in Tallahassee, because I understand that, you know, God rest his soul, Bobby Bowden's not walking through that door anytime soon, but he showed that you can win by doing things the right way. You can still be a good person and still win games. But Lane Kiffin has completely changed his mentality, his persona. He is now a lot more mature, but he also knows what it took to, he knows what it takes to win. And I think a lot of that came from being under Nick Saban and seeing that, like you said, man, you have to build a program from the trenches outward to start with. You have to be willing to take a chance on some of these guys. You know, you look at Mike Norvell is very big on fit and family. And I understand that, because you don't want culture problems in the locker room. But there comes a time when you got to go out and get dudes on this roster. And even if they're a little bit tough to handle, you got to figure that out. You know, I mean, you look at like Nick Saban has said before, where he had players that were less than well behaved and got in trouble. He's like, look, man, people want me to kick them to the curb, but I'm going to stick with, where do you want him, out in the streets or in this program where he can be around good mentors and things like that? Mm-hmm. You know, look at what George is doing. You know, they, you know, I always joke that, like, look, I'm not their guidance counselor. I take a few misdemeanors for a few championships. It is what it is. I want to see things done the right way at Florida State. But at the same time, sometimes you got to step out of your comfort zone and be willing to do things that aren't the normal when the things that you're doing aren't working. You know, and yes, Jordan Travis was a very rare commodity. He was a program guy, a great ambassador for this program. All the guys that you had on that team were bought into the team aspect. But you got to get some dudes, man. Every now and then, fit and family can't always be the most important thing. You have to be able to go out and get these guys. And so, yeah, I think you're going to have to really reinvent the way you do things if you're Mike Norvell. So I think you make a lot of good points with that. You know, and speaking of Lane Kiffin, like, the conversation that we'll have here in a second about the portal, I think, is another good conversation, where everybody hates the portal now this year because we got it wrong once. But Lane Kiffin built that program through the portal. I just talked about it on our show that dropped yesterday. Like, he has not had a top 20 recruiting class in the last 3 years, but he's had three consecutive top two portal classes. That program is built from the portal. So the portal can still work. You just need to really supplement through high school recruiting as a Florida school. But we'll get into that in just 1 second. But yeah, I mean, I agree, man. So like, when we talk about this 2025 thing, the one thing that I look at here is, if it does go poorly, like you talked about, if it looks bad, if the wins aren't there, the belief and the support will not come back. And, you know, you talked about the money being there for the buyout. You need to put that into NIL to get the talent. You need to put that into the coaches to go get some good assistant coaches, But if you don't do well in 2025, that money's going to continue to dry up, because I'm sure the donations have fallen off a lot this year. You know, and recruiting is not going to recover if you don't have a good vision to sell, if you don't have a good product to sell. Because, you know, the one thing that I talked about with Mike Norvell before was, like, it's different to step into a program and have, like, that year one where you're 3-6, but you're like, look, man, look what I took over. This was a dumpster fire. This is where we're trying to get. This is my belief. This is my vision, versus having to sell a message that's like, this is my mess that I made. I lit this dumpster on fire. And so that's a lot different, man. And the thing is, like, one of the reasons why I think 2025 has to springboard you into success fast is not only getting in good graces with the fan base, who are your donors, but also with recruits and portal prospects, is because, like I've touched on before, man, that 2026 schedule is tough. You have to go to Alabama, to Miami, to Louisville. You got Notre Dame, Clemson, and SMU at home. That's a hard schedule. You're going to be in a tough position, and we're not in the SEC, so we're not probably going to get it. I mean, look at the same conversation that we heard last year with Florida State getting left out by some SEC teams. Now Miami's sweating bullets because they might get left out. SMU might get left out as a one-loss ACC team. You're not going to get that same luxury by being a three-loss team getting into the playoffs. So you need 2025 to springboard you to a point where you're going to be able to get that recruiting going. You're going to be able to attract big name prospects from the portal going forward, because that 2025 schedule is easier than the 26 schedule and the 24 schedule. And I think that needs to be at least 6 wins in bowl eligibility, probably 7 or 8 wins. But you just got to see progress on the field, progress in recruiting. It has to look better. And the one thing I do want to touch on with that schedule that we didn't have time to bring up on the show last night with Mark, but I think when you look at from a scheduling alone standpoint, we think they're going to get better by who they bring in at coaching, from coaching standpoint. We think they're going to be able to bring in some players to help this roster, which we'll talk about next. But when you look at the schedule alone, in 2024, Florida State has faced 6 top 50 defenses so far this season, and 0 ranked 100th or below. Next year, only 2 of the opponents on your schedule — now teams are allowed to get better, but only 2 opponents that you have scheduled next year have a top 50 defense: Alabama and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's struggling right now too. We don't know if their coach is going to be retained or not. And you have 4 teams that are ranked 100th or below in scoring defense, plus an FCS team. So you have to take advantage of that easier schedule. The path to getting better from a scheduling alone standpoint is there. So you have to maximize everything else to take advantage of that, to get back into good graces, to make this a 1-year blip on the radar and not something to where it's so bad this year that if you go 9-3 in 26, people are going to be like, man, this just ain't working. You could be like, okay, we saw significant progress against a schedule that you should win 8 games against. But then you had a really hard, like the Florida argument, you had a really hard schedule, but you see the path to getting better with the young quarterback. But that's the type of things that you have to see. And I think you've made great points with that. You got to have the future at your quarterback. You got to have a core group of guys that you can build around, you know, because you don't want to have to fire Mike Norvell and start over, because there's no guarantee that the next coach can be better. But we're going to have a hard time trusting him going forward because, you know, again, like, we never saw 1-9, 2-10 out of Mike Norvell. Never. None of us saw that. Nick Saban didn't see that. But I also always come back to the point that he has done things that a lot of good coaches have never done. He's led Memphis to the Cotton Bowl in a 12-win season late in his tenure there. He's led Florida State to 19 consecutive wins in an ACC championship within 4 years of taking over a dumpster fire, probably one play, one injury away from leading them to the playoffs. So I think the ceiling is there. The floor was lower than we thought. Now, let's get into the how they rebound in 2025 before we talk about, like, maybe what happens if they don't. And so I think you made a lot of good points then. That's a good place to start. I think the first thing is, obviously, the immediate change is you have to get these coaching hires right from top to bottom. You got to nail them. They need good coordinators, and getting big-name proven ones would be a huge positive. There's been some belief. Me and Michael kind of went back and forth a little bit this on the last show about, you know, you need to be like, we are Florida State. We're not going to accept anything less. Look, man, you know, you can go work for Blockbuster 5 years ago, but if there's a going out of business sale on the front sign on the front door, it's going to be you're not really going to want to take that job. So there's that argument too. But getting big name proven coordinators would be a huge positive, because I think that will help not only if you bring in, like, say, a Muschamp or Dan Mullen as your coordinators, not, I'm not saying that's who they're going to get, I think you're less likely to fire those guys after 2025 because you went out and got those. And when you say proven, that doesn't mean it's going to carry over to the new stop. We've seen plenty of coordinators go from one job to the next that didn't have success. But I will say that when you look at who Mike Norvell is going to hire, you want some big names at these coordinator positions. You want guys, I want good schemers at the coordinator positions and really good recruiters at the position coach positions. That's kind of my thought process of where I'm at. And I know people are really nervous, and I'll throw it back to you on this, but I know a lot of people are really nervous about can he hire good coaches, because this last staff, you know, let's be honest, they overachieved for the level of staff that they were. He still did hire Dan Lanning. He still did hire Kenny Dillingham and Ryan Silverfield, who have their teams at the number one team, 8-2, 9-2. He's made good hires in the past. So I think he's got to get this right. Has to. There is a very razor-thin margin of error for getting these hires wrong, because you won't get this chance again. So let's start with the coaching staff changes coming in 2025 and just kind of give me your thoughts on where they're at and what they need to do to get this right.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's what's so infuriating about this. And I've said exactly what you said multiple times. I know he can see the talent and get good coaches because of who he went after, who he's had on his staff. You know, you named all the names. But the issue when he got here in 2020 was it's COVID. You're coming off, you know, the programs in the trash can, coming off of Willie Taggart. It was hard. He didn't get the guys he wanted. A lot of the different outside of, I don't even think Dilley was his first choice. Maybe he was, but definitely it was like his third choice of defensive coordinator. Yeah. On down the line, you keep Odell. You end up getting Ron Dugan's wide receiver coach. There was a lot of things that just didn't happen. So what's so infuriating is, you go 13-0, you get knocked out of the playoff. That was your opportunity.
Yeah.
To land a crazy recruiting class, to get an awesome portal haul, to go hire any coach in the world you want. So now, with the record being for all the reasons you said and the fact that it could possibly blow up after 1 year, it's going to make it that much tougher to bring in, you know, exactly who you want. But I do have faith. I'll go ahead and say it. There's been rumors behind the scenes for the past 2 weeks that the UNLV guy's already hired. Like, he's going to be here. As soon as the season's over, he's going to be in here with us. I don't know whether it's true or not. I won't throw anybody's name out there. I've just seen it. Say I've seen it on War Chance Board a bunch or whoever, even though I don't get on there. But, yeah, it's one of those things. I would be fine with that. I would be happy with that. I don't know if it happens. I've said all along, Dan Mullen, like, yeah, that's, to me, that's the pie in the sky. That would just be a perfect somebody that you could come in, count on him to call plays, you know, run the staff, hire good guys, the whole nine yards. So I'd be fine with that. But can you talk him into, in that position he's in, coming to Florida State? He'd probably have a better opportunity somewhere else. So we'll see if that happens. I've said since the beginning, my hope and kind of the best chance of this thing getting going and down the right path would be more of, I forget what coach it was. I believe it was the coach at UCLA or something that was like kind of on the hot seat going into the next year. And he said, screw it. And he just quit and went to be the OC somewhere and had success.
Yeah. Chip Kelly. Yeah,
exactly. That's right. It was Chip Kelly. So I could see Gus Malzahn maybe doing something like that. If the wheels are falling off at UCF and he doesn't think he's going to make it, or even if they fire him, then you're like kind of bringing the top of your coaching tree to be your offensive coordinator. One of the biggest issues with this current staff, it felt like you had a bunch of yes men.
Yeah.
Yes men in the way that they say, yes, sir. But then as soon as you walk away, they sit back down and get on their phone. And I'm not going to say any particular names, but, you know, when it comes to recruiting and things of that nature, like, it's just known out there that they were just, there's a lot of hubris and this is Florida State. And, you know, you come here, and that kind of has to change. You have to humble yourself. Back to the previous question, and as it relates this one about how, like, Lane kind of grew up and became more professional and things of that nature. I need a little bit more Lane Kiffin in my Mike Norvell. Like, this is 2024. We just saw a presidential election. Social media and just the perception around things and looking cool matters. I made fun of and talked all the crap about Deion Sanders, even at Texas with him lining up the Lambos and stuff like that. I think that's ugly. I think it's corny. I hate it. But you know who doesn't? 17-year-olds.
Yeah, you're right. I hate it too, man. But the whole driving, Lane's driving people around in a Rolls Royce saying, come to the SIP and all that. Yeah, no, I'm with you, man.
yeah, that's just, that's the main thing for me. And it remains to be seen. It's so hard to have these conversations because you just don't know. But yeah, I think that's the way you do it. As I said earlier, it starts with the quarterback. But, you know, two more weeks till we find out. We're going to see really quick kind of where they go with it.
Yeah, and let me get your thoughts on this too, because I think when you talk about like bringing in a Will Muschamp, bringing in a Dan Mullen, like, yes, you have an opportunity there for that not to work by having too many alphas in the room. But I think at the same time, as long as you can control that, because, you know, this is something that, frankly, when you talk about Lane Kiffin and that presence, you know, we had this conversation on your show there for a little bit where it's like, if Florida were to get Lane Kiffin and you had that personality and Mario Cristobal in the state of Florida, and then you have Mike Norvell, who's kind of timid Mike, man, Mike's not really that alpha dog type of guy, and you need to see that. And that's something that's been a frustration from a lot of people, is where, like, he kind of was that guy in 2023. We saw Killer Mike, and now this year we've seen him kind of go into his shell. He's looked lost at times. And so I think you need that alpha dog. Like I've always said, man, I love Kirby Smart. That is my kind of coach. I love Dan Lanning. The kind that, like, if you watch his locker room speeches and stuff like that, he wants you to literally go out there and rip someone's head off and crap down their throat and beat them into oblivion. You know, Dan Lanning's out here calling timeouts so his team can watch the opposing fans leave the stadium. That's badass. Like, I want that in my program. I want that type of person. That's why I want a Will Muschamp as my defensive coordinator. And I do think you need to have Florida State throw that name cachet out there when they're trying to get these coordinators. I like Brennan Marion at UNLV. I would be perfectly fine with having him in here. I think you need to put a really good positional coach staff around him of experienced big name guys that can be dogs on the trail. And, you know, the thing is too, man, is like, I think when you look at the money aspect, because that's always a big driver for getting people in the door, you know, and they paid Adam Fuller like one of the best coordinators in college football. It's still cheaper to overpay coordinators to get a Dan Mullen, to get a Will Muschamp out of an easy role. It's still cheaper to overpay them than to buy out Mike Norvell, because you're not going to pay them $9 million a year combined. If it's $4 or $5 million a year, that's still cheaper than the buyout. So I think you need to leverage that aspect as well because to be able to get this right. But yeah, man, and another thing that I'll say, and I'll throw this back to you to get your thoughts kind of where I was going with this, was I would like to see the off-the-field staff built better too, because now that you can have analyst coach players too, like I said on yesterday's show, I think Odell would be a great defensive line analyst. Yep. He can be a developer, but he doesn't have to recruit because the recruiting has not been good enough. So what are your thoughts on like having some former head coaches in the room, because you need some different visions? I know people in the comment section have been a little pissed because we've talked about Mike Norvell getting guys from his tree with his connections. People want different mindsets, and I like that too. I agree with that. But what are your thoughts on maybe getting some NFL guys, some former head coaches, to come into the room as either analysts like we see at Bama, Georgia, or even as the coordinator positions, just to be like, man, you got to have someone who can bring a different voice into the room and not be a yes man, like you said.
Yeah, and look, that's why I keep sticking on Dan Mullen, and you led me to the water, so I'm going to drink it here. Say you bring Dan Mullen, and he's your offensive coordinator, and this thing goes to heck, and your offense is top 20, but your defense is the worst in the country, kind of opposite of what we had last year, and you can obviously see that it's not going to work out. Talk about a hell of an interim coach.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you could put him there. Whatever, give him a shot, figure some things out. If you bring Brennan Marion from UNLV and it doesn't work out, then he's in a rough spot. He's just given up all his cachet, and he's going to have to go back and start somewhere else. The thing about – I've been saying that about Odell, like, since 2022, when this rule was first talked about it. And now that it's enacted, like, if you're not about recruiting and all you want to do is coach, the only reason you're the coach then is for the money.
Right.
It's specifically because, you know, coaches make more than analysts. You love the program and you just want to continue coaching, then come in as an analyst. So like, there's no reason to keep Odell as the D-line coach. I love him. But you have to recruit. You have to go get the guys. But I totally agree about that. I think, you know, we were talking about Alford's comments and his town hall that he did recently, and they're talking about how much power the GM in the future of this program is going to have. Like, he basically out and said, yeah, the person that's going to negotiate with every single portal guy, every high school player that's going to negotiate these contracts is going to be the GM. So if that position is going to hold that much power, regardless of what you think of Derrick Ray, he has no business in that position. Like, you've got to get somebody that you're going to pay. And I was speaking in hyperbole before the show. I said $2 million, but no, something, whatever NFL GM gets paid, like something close to that. I don't even know how much it is. $750,000. It needs to be treated as an assistant coach.
Right.
Because that's literally the backbone of your program. You've got a cap, whether it's a soft cap and how much you can fundraise that we have now, or it's going to be the hard cap with the house settlement. You can't afford to make these giant misses. It's going to be harder and harder to kind of check projections. And yeah, that's why you need guys on staff that are going to call you out on it and be willing to go get guys. I need a coach, a defensive line coach, that when, you know, your GM or somebody says, well, this is all we can give you. You know, that's the most, I need a D-line coach that's going to call the GM, call Ingram, call whoever he's got to go over their head, call Mike Norvell and say, I need this guy.
Yeah.
I don't care if you got to pay him $5
million. Yeah.
We got to get him if we want to have a chance to win, you know, and evaluations and everything. I think you spoke to the fire of some of these different coaches. That was a big problem at the beginning. Like the first four or five games, it's like Mike knew they were mentally weak. He knew his coaches maybe led him astray, didn't do exactly what he thought, this and that. But he just was like a kicked puppy. Like, I would rather you just eviscerate everybody. Make them quit.
Yeah.
Make them hit the portal. Like, we're to a point now where this being nice and just – and you saw it blow up a little bit. You finally saw it blow up a little bit a couple weeks before he fired Fuller. They don't wear face masks, but if Fuller – and I forget, it was another defensive coach – had a face mask on, he would have ripped it. He was upset. Yeah. And they took 12 guys out on the field like three times in that game. So – maybe getting the new staff will take some of that familiarity away. I also think the average age of the staff, like, you know, Mike's so young, and you've got these guys, Dugan, Shannon, these are all 60, 70-year-old guys. It's like, you don't want to cuss that guy out. How are you going to berate somebody who's been at a college for 40 years, and literally working as a coach and was an All-American there before that? It's tough, but it's just kind of, you know, it's what you've got to do. I saw a video on Twitter. I can't remember the coach. Maybe it was PJ something other else. But it was a player talking about how they had a rough, you know, rough start to the year or whatever. And it was like the second game and they were all terrible. And they get in the locker room and he said, he singled me out, man. He just, I won't say what he said because it's all bad curse words. But, you know, he singled me out. And I got him mad and I was like, man, what? But then he just went right to the next person and he went down the whole roster and just tore him a new one. The whole team. And he said, after that, we were all ready to run through a brick wall for him.
Yeah.
Like, we need a little bit of that. And we're not in those conversations and things behind the scenes, but just from what you hear in the press conferences week after week, call a spade, say the wide receivers, wide receivers can't catch a cold.
Yeah.
But no, we hear, you know, they're catching it in practice. It's not matching what we see at practice.
Yeah.
So, you know, it goes back to the yes men thing, but I agree 100% with the hires. You need to get as much experience. People that are willing to speak up and not just go along with the program. Obviously, you have to do what the coach says. But in those meeting rooms, like when you're trying to, you know, he's sitting at the head of the table. He's got the coordinator and the defensive coordinator next to him. I need my wide receiver coach to be willing to speak up and fight for the concept he wants to put in or the player he wants to go get. And even if at the end of the day, Mike Norvell or the OC says no, it's on his off his conscience. He made it known and he let everybody know because the truth rings free. If the guy says that and then the next week it doesn't work and he's sitting there, okay, well, let's go with Billy's idea. You know, let's go get this guy, et cetera, et cetera.
No, man, I think those are really great points because I, you know, and I remember we were on a Twitter space, me and you were on there too, and Robert Cooper was on there, and he talked about how when Mike Norvell first came into the program during that 0-4 run, like they didn't like Mike Norvell. They did not believe in what he was selling as a team. But then he had that fiery press conference, that one thing, you know, that was like the light switch that flipped the program. And he said after they saw that, they were like, okay, man, they were ready to run through a brick wall. And so you have to have that. You have to have that kind of Mike Norvell. And like you said, man, I think it's hard. Like if I go to work and I know I'm right and my boss is not, but my boss has been there twice as long as me and has more power, or has more experience, it's going to be hard for me to tell him off. You know, it's going to be hard for him to tell an Odell, tell a Randy off and things like that. And so I think that because he's young, because he's doesn't have a lot of power four experience, he doesn't have a lot of cachet behind his name as Mike Norvell, that it may be hard for him to be that ruthless type of coach like you see a Kirby or a Dan Lanning or a Nick Saban or whatever, who if you don't produce, you get gone quick. And so I think you got to have that come in there. And because I think really one of the reasons I think you want to see a Dan Mullen type of OC or something like that. And again, I'm all in favor of Brandon Marion, but I think Mike Norvell needs to give up play calling, because not because it was bad this year, but because we know he likes to be involved in all aspects of this program. And I think he needs to go back, like when he had Dillingham, and I understand they had more success when he was, you know, the OC and all that, but I think he needs to have a real OC so he can go back to being a CEO type of head coach, so he can put out fires across this program, so he can monitor all these things, so he can be more involved in recruiting and not also have to worry about running an offensive game plan every single week, calling the plays. You got Alex Atkins, who's not a real OC, who's it's not like he's like, hey, Mike, here's the offensive game plan on your desk. This is what we're going to do. And we don't know, like you said, we're not in these rooms, but yeah, man, I think you got to have a fiery Mike Norvell. You got to have guys who are willing to speak their mind. You got to have, you know, I think he needs to be monitoring all aspects of the program as a CEO type of head coach and not worried about being the play caller, because it is so bad and you have so many things to fix. And so that's why I think you need to get that core staff in here that has a really big experience cachet that they're bringing in, guys who are willing, who can say, look, this is what we did here to win this. You know, Dan Mullen didn't have a ton of success, but he won the SEC East a few times, played in the SEC Championship. You know, Will Muschamp has had success at Georgia. They know what it takes to win a national championship. We talked about this before the show. Even a guy like Jimbo Fisher, I'm not saying, you know, you want to bring him back as your head coach, maybe your GM or something like that, because that's going to be a massive position going forward. You need someone that knows what it takes to win at the highest level and sustain that success. You look at Alabama under Nick Saban. I'm not saying Mike Norvell is the next Nick Saban, but it didn't matter who they had at quarterback or who they turned over on the staff every year. It was the process of knowing how to get there. You know, it's like they always say, man, don't make a goal. Set up a process of how to reach that goal, and the goals will achieve themselves. And so that's where I think they need to have coaches like that, to where it's like, man, we got other head coaches in this room. We got other guys. And plus, not to mention, like we've talked about before, people wanted them to fire people mid-season. Well, who were you going to bring in? Were you going to fire Alex Atkins? And no offense to the Gabe guy, but we saw the offensive line in the first three games. Was it just going to get better with that same coach? No. If you fire your DC at Georgia, guess who? Hey, Will, you're the DC now. Like, you got a former head coach to fill in. So you have those fallback options. So, man, I think that's a great point that you make there. And so now I think the part that we'll transition into is, once you get these coaching hires out of the way, and, you know, we're really anticipating, we're chomping at the bit to see what coaches they hire, because it's really going to define how this program goes. To me, priority number two is, you got to go to the portal and you got to infuse this roster with talent, because, you know, we've talked about this before. You look at last year, 10 NFL draft picks, 12 total put into the league. This year you look and you're like, man, there's just nobody that really scares you. There's a couple of guys here that are good, you know, maybe all ACC caliber guys. That's about it. Right. That's it. That's it. I don't see anybody else, you know, nobody else. And so you got to go get guys that scare you. This is something that I pointed out last night on Mark's show, is like, when you look at Clemson, when Clemson has a bad season, it's still a 9 or 10 win season. And I mean, I know we want to get out of the ACC, but thank goodness we're playing there right now. But the difference where Clemson is at is their talent level outside of Florida State and Miami is so much higher than everyone else in the ACC, that even when they're not good or poorly coached, they're so much more talented that they can still go out and win 8, 9, 10 games. And so that's where Florida State needs to be. That's why Florida State was so good when they came into the ACC, because they had so much more talent than every other team in this conference. And so, unfortunately, we're going to have to go back to the portal to do that. But like we've talked about before, Mike Norvell was the portal king at one point. Lane Kiffin got that program into a playoff contender, primarily through the portal. So you're going to have to go in and bring in a boatload of guys, because the 25 class is kind of, you know, it's already done. It's a sinking ship. It's not going to help you in 2026, you know, or 2025, unless like you get Solomon Thomas and he can commit, you know, he could play right away or something like that. Who knows if you're ever going to land him? That's probably not going to be helpful. It's got to be through the portal. You got to bring in a lot of guys, but you got to have a high hit rate in this portal, like we've seen Mike Norvell have in the past. They can't get lazy and just take guys from, oh, we got a guy from Alabama because Alabama's the logo next to his name. Nick Saban said it on game day. There's a reason these guys are in the portal. There's a reason that these guys are backups. So in my opinion, and I'll get your thoughts on this, I think you have to go out and get guys who have proven that they can produce at whatever level they come from. You can't just say it has to be a Power 4 guy, because Braden Fisk came from the G5 at Western Michigan. Jared Verse was an FCS guy who was extremely productive and came in there. So I think you can take some guys from those lower levels, but I also think and you pointed at this earlier, you can't be too good to overpay somebody, because you're going to have to overpay for a couple positions when you're this bad. Because the other thing is, you now have Ohio State in the portal. They're spending $20 million on that roster. You have Bama's in the portal. Georgia's in the portal. The big fish are in the water with you now, whereas everybody thought Mike Norvell was, you know, kind of going against the grain by doing the portal thing early on. You were kind of the big fish in the pond. Now you're not. So you're going to have to overpay for a few positions, but it has to be the right ones. You can't money ball this roster like they tried to do after last year, where they missed on a lot of guys. You might have to overpay for a quarterback. I know some people, and you know, feel free to expand on this. Some people don't feel like we need to take a quarterback in the portal. I do, because I think you're probably going to lose either Brock or Luke. Hopefully not both, but I think you're going to lose one or the other. Brock's still young. You can still develop him, but you can't afford to miss next year. You can't afford to be like, we're going to roll with Luke, and then he's not good enough, and then you have like the DJU situation. You got to go get a proven winner at quarterback. Plus, you got to get that lagway type of thing where you want guys to want to come play with them. Like if you landed, you know, if you went and got Jordan Travis in the portal, the Jordan Travis we know, or you went and got a proven guy in the portal, guys are immediately going to be attracted to that. You're going to have to go overpay for some offensive linemen, because you can't roll this bad of a product out there next year, or it don't make a difference who you bring in at quarterback or coaches. You can't roll the same crap product out here up front on the offensive line. You know, you got some guys to work with. Maybe you get Richie Leonard back. You know, he said he's going to come back. We'll see. The defensive line, you got to get some talent in here, because you touched on this on Mark's show last night. You got nobody there. Now, I will say 247 has reported that they're trying to retain Daryl Jackson, Josh Farmer, and AZ Thomas. That would be huge if you could get them back. I don't know that that's going to be a possibility. But, man, you're going to have to overpay for some of these key positions. To me, that's quarterback, that's the trenches, and that's if a Keon Coleman type of receiver comes available. So give me your thoughts on what they're going to have to do in the portal this offseason, because to me, I think that's really, outside of the coaching hires, that's priority number one this offseason.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of talk about the playoff and the parity in college football. I think it's pretty clear now, with 4 or 5 years of whatever evidence of the portal that we have, there's more parity in college football than ever.
Yep.
And with the kind of shuffling that has gone on, there's a reason people are backups, as you said. Whether you're at Bama or at Georgia, nobody has a guy on their third string or second string that would be starting at Florida State, yada, yada, anymore. That just doesn't really exist. And you have guys, basically, it's football is an execution sport. So, like, if all things are equal, and you have a G5 team that executes exactly as good as Georgia, they're not going to have a chance. But if you've got a team with all the talent that Georgia has, but this G5 team actually executes better, they're going to whip their butt. Excuse me. That's how Vanderbilt whipped Bama, because even though they don't have anywhere near the players, they just execute. And that translates, as you mentioned, Jared Verse, all the different people that came from lesser places. So I don't know what changed, what made them decide to go forward looking. It seemed like kind of they were trying to supplement and fix the misses they had in the high school recruiting classes a couple of years. But, you know, obviously it fell on their face. I don't care where any of the guys come from. You just have to get guys that have multiple years, or at least one good year, of just showing they can catch the football as a wide receiver, you know, defeat a block as a defensive end, sustain a block as an offensive line. You cannot afford to be doing projections. That's what the you know, the bottom 15 people of your high school recruiting class is for. When you're going to the portal, we need to get guys that can come in and contribute immediately. And when you talk about how you can change the dynamics of it, what coaches you bring in, does Mike Norvell give this up, become a CEO? I think that's kind of the biggest, you know, issue some people have behind the scenes. Like, you bring Dan Mullen in, if you bring the UNLV guy in and you actually hand off game planning to them, well, then Mike Norvell can go recruit while that's going on. Instead of when your quarterback pulls up on campus, you send Tony Tokars out on a golf cart to pick him up because you're writing the game plan. No, Tony Tokars or whoever you put in there, Brennan Marion's making the game plan, and Mike Norvell, you go pick him up. You know, and just little things like that, and you know, selling the message is just going to be the important thing. And I think, you know, again, just like I said all year, that even though, as you mentioned, like, how are you going to fire everybody? Who's going to coach the team? There was a certain point, whether it was week 6 or 7, that you needed to just fire somebody to just signal to the fan base, to the boosters, to the recruits out there, that this isn't up to the standard. We're going to fix it. We're going to change it. And boy, was I ever happy when they finally made the moves. Like, I'm not here to celebrate folks getting fired, but it was a signal that we're willing to change and we're going to get this thing fixed. And, you know, to the kind of main point of this entire show, if you can show all those things, if you can go out there and do that in 2025, there can be a groundswelling of support and there can be hope for the future. And we've seen it. Like, in 2022, what you did with your wide receivers in 2022, that's what you've got to do to the entire offense.
Yep.
They brought in 4 wide receivers. That became the wide receiver core. That was it. You know, that was it. Johnny Wilson. And then you added on, and then 2023, you were able to get just like studs, a couple here, a couple there. So that's what you've got to build up to. We saw Deion do it with the offensive line. It can be done. It's not going to be perfect, but you can get guys in there that, you know, will get you whatever to the 6-6 ball club. And then the X factor, of course, is that quarterback. The people that don't want to bring in a portal quarterback, I do not know what you're looking at. I love me some Luke, and eventually he will be good, but he needs time. He only started, you know, a handful of games in high school. He was a safety until he was a junior. So it's like, he's not like Lagway, who had 6,000 yards every year and a spread out pass him offense. And Lagway is a perfect example of, like, you know, potential or just execution. He's thrown so many balls and done it so many times, even though it's at the high school level.
Yeah.
It still looks the same. Like, and so that's my thing. I want people that have, you know, they've got experience, they've got snaps. I don't care what level they're at. Just show me where at that level that they dominated and they executed. Because it doesn't matter if Jalen Ramsey's on you or if I'm on you. If you're open by 2 yards and the ball hits your hands, you either catch it or you don't.
Yeah.
And you're like, I know Mike Norvell can call plays. I know he can get good things out of his quarterbacks, but something's got to give there. Like, you know, so what you're doing, I think I did the best I could.
Yeah, what you're doing is not working. And even then, like, the school that I played Benedictine against in high school, and that's not really high-level high school football where Luke came from. But I agree, man. I think, like, when you look at – and you talk about the execution factor. Like, man, when you talk about that, to me it's kind of like, okay, well, this is how Florida State has a more talented roster than on its schedule, Clemson, Miami, and Florida. Everyone else, and I think we're ahead of Florida or one of the two. We're 11, 12, and 13 in there somewhere. We're more talented than every team we're losing to outside of 3. And so when you – it doesn't matter if you have the talent. If you don't execute, it's not going to work. And that's why I think you need to go get these productive guys. Like, you look at a Tatum Bethune. That was a guy who was insanely productive at UCF.
Where was that at linebacker this year? We didn't, we didn't get it.
Exactly. Like, you,
he wasn't great. People weren't even happy when we got him, but he played the position and showed that he could do it. Sorry to interrupt you, but you hit the nail on the head.
Exactly, man. Like, you look at him, he was insanely productive at UCF at a lower level, but then you bring in someone like Sean Murphy, who was really had no production, but he came from Alabama, so he had the name cachet. We haven't even seen him play this year. And I don't know if that's because of an injury, but still, there's a number of positions that you can go down the line and you can do that. You can look at where they brought in a Keon Coleman, who was productive. Now, I know he was a really big name in the portal, but it came from Michigan State, a not great program, versus Malik Benson, came from Alabama, the number 3 wide receiver. I thought he was going to be great. I think a lot of that's offensive line and quarterback issues too, But now you see why maybe he was the number three. You know, you can, again, you can go down the line with a lot of these guys that were like, okay, well, Jared Verse had the production. Jamie Robinson was an insanely productive guy that you brought in, and he translated into a two-time leading tackler, two-time All-ACC performer. But then you bring in some of these guys that haven't proven they can do it. And like you said, man, I think in the portal era, it's harder to hold depth because guys are going to go find opportunities other places. So you can go find someone from a G5 school that maybe started at a Power 4 school that was a 3- or 4-star recruit to begin with. So I think that's really what they got to look for this year is, like you said, man, guys that have shown they can catch a pass, guys that have shown they can blow up a block, guys that have shown they can block. And you have to bring that in and then hope that the coaching staff you hire takes them to that next level. Because at the end of the day, as long as you can execute correctly, you will have an equal amount of talent, if not more talented than most of the teams on your roster, given with what you have. And I think that brings me to point number two, is one of the other things you have to focus on is roster retention. Because here's the other unknown factor, the X factor going into this offseason. We know there's a lot of talented young guys on this roster. We've seen some of these guys starting to get play time now. Now, they're not ready, but they're seasoning right now. They're getting that experience. They can hit the door as soon as that portal opens. So you might lose some crucial pieces. And, you know, when you talk about the quarterback position, the one thing that I always liked about Willie Taggart, and I know there's not a lot to like about Willie Taggart, but one of the things he always said is, look, it's your job to go out there and take the starting job. It's my job to go out there and find someone to take your job. So, like, if they're that good and you go bring in a portal quarterback, well, hey, the best man wins. And Mike Norvell has to put this team in the position to win, no matter if it hurts people's feelings, no matter if it pushes them towards the portal, because these guys might leave anyway. And so I definitely think that roster retention and going out and getting the best guys to give you the chance to win is priority number two. And then priority number three is going to be finally bringing that high school recruiting up to where it has to be to sustain the success, because the portal is going to get you to where you want to be in 25 and 26. But then if he's going to make this run last through the rest of his contract, that's where the high school recruiting has to be your safety net. You know, we've talked about it on the show before where the portal works great, but if you didn't recruit well enough at high school to where the rest of your roster is good, if you miss on some of those and you don't have plan Bs to go to that are competent, this is how you end up at 1-9. And so that has to be done. Because the other thing is, you know, if you think back to last year, we thought like, oh, there's going to be all these guys in the portal. We're going to go out and get all these guys. There wasn't as many coaching changes as we thought there was going to be. There was not as many big names that entered the portal as we thought there were going to be in 2024. It was a lot smaller than we thought it was going to be. The pool was. And so that's why you can't predict what's going to be in the portal every year. You know what the high school is going to produce. So you have to go out and they got to make a priority of high school recruiting going forward. It's just portal is going to get you there now. But man, you got to maximize the talent that you have on the roster that you currently have. But you got to start recruiting better to high school level, especially at a place like Florida State in the most talent-rich state in the country.
Especially on the offensive line, specifically offensive tackle yes. and defensive line. Like that's the one. Like, it's tough to get them, but if you're going to get a D-line out of the portal that's going to be successful, chances are he's only going to be there 1 year, 2 years tops. And then you're going to be right back to looking for another one. You have got to get those guys out of high school that could, you know, like you said, worst comes to worst, if they have to play, they could be somewhat decent. But with a couple years, they're going to be ready to step up and take that role. It seems like, you know, we got Johnny Wilson – And the word out was he couldn't catch the ball and all this stuff, and it worked out. He got better. They fell in love with that model. Like,
yeah.
And just at some point, let's do just less projecting, and let's just look at the tape and what they had put on the field at the highest level, and let's bring them in, and we'll take our chances with that. But, yeah, I couldn't agree more on the recruiting part. And that's, you know, we started the show with that kind of – that philosophy has to change. We talked all last year about how this particular class – was the most loaded O-line and D-line haul in high school recruiting in 2 or 3 years. And for whatever reason, they decided to focus on this and that for 23, and they were going to grab these guys out of the portal, and then we're just going to clean everybody up on O-line and D-line this year and have that there. Well, that all fell apart. That's over with. So it's back to the drawing board. So not so much the 2025 season, like we talked about, That's going to be all portal. They're going to get 30, 40 guys out of the portal. Maybe you can get one or two of those guys we're talking about when you get your new coordinators in here that'll wait till February. But no, you've got to get the guys, put the product on the field. And that 2026 recruiting class, it's just, that's the most important thing out of everything, even more than wins and losses. Like we've talked about, you got to at least be a bowl team or be right there at it.
Yeah.
But even if you win 8 games and you're the 15th recruiting class in the country, he might still get gone. Like, cause it's like, we just can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. If you got the 15th class in the country, it better be because you only have like offensive line and defensive line and they're all studs.
Yeah.
You know, and you got the rest of the guys out of the portal or something. But yeah, it's you really nailed some stuff there. And I forgot the other point I was going to make off of what you said, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree, man, because like even if in 2026 you win 8 or 10 games and it's like maybe not where you wanted to be on the win-loss column, but it's still good, but you have like the 5th ranked recruiting class, that's enough to get you by. You can't keep getting out-recruited by Florida and Miami who are having 5 and 7 win seasons when you're winning 10 and 13 games because this class fell apart. And, you know, one thing that I've always talked about is like when you think about Michael Alford, and this goes back to the general manager stuff that you talked about too, where – yes, he extended Mike Norvell, but Mike Norvell was not his hire. And so right now you have a basketball program that's failing, a football program that's failing, and that defines his term as athletic director at Florida State. So, you know, I know he wants it to work out with Mike Norvell, and he feels like he did the right thing to extend him at the time. But don't act like if things go south that Michael Alford probably won't be looking to put his stamp on this program by making a change at head coach. And so that's something that you got to see progress both on the field and in the recruiting, because he knows that you got to recruit better than that too, I'm sure. And the last thing I want to touch on here is they also have to flip the culture, man. They, I don't know, like, I understand Mike Norvell dealt with some things at the end of last year that have never happened in college football before, ever in the history of ever, until this year, because apparently it looks like there's going to be some more drama with the CFP. But you got to flip the culture. You cannot have guys quitting on you on the field. I know Mike Norvell denies that vehemently. We watch the games on Saturday. We see there's quit all over this team. We see there's very individualistic mentalities. I've heard from, you know, decent sources out there that there's frustrations in the locker room with how NIL funds are being distributed amongst this team. You got to come in here, and I think you got to get it. You have to flip the culture. One of the things that I will touch on, and I know, again, we're not trying to be Pitt. One of the things that Narduzzi did was they went from being everybody gets paid to they get paid by who performs the best. And so I think you have to kind of flip the way you do some NIL things here. I think you have to get back to a hard-working, hard-nosed mentality in this team, in this locker room. You can't have guys who quit. You got to find some leaders. Because that was one of the main differences between 23 and 24. You know, if you were, I'm sure with that 2023 team or some of the 2013 team, when you saw some of these guys, you know, when you had a Jalen Ramsey or a Telvin Smith or a Jared Verse or some of these guys, if you were loafing, you were probably going to, you didn't want to be caught in the locker room after a practice or a game because they were going to probably whoop up on you. You know what I mean? They weren't going to accept that. This team doesn't seem to have those leaders like that. I would like to see him start tackling in practice a little bit more. That's just me personally. But I think you got to flip the culture, too, to get guys to buy back into this process, to get guys who want to work hard to build this thing. And they won't accept anything less than the best.
You reminded me of my other point that you had brought up in the previous question, but it still applies. So in 2022, that's when the battles in came around. Ingram Smith, our guy Max, you know, eventually gets hired on, the silent investors behind it. And they made a crazy push. It was all about retainment to start. And they retained all these guys, you know, Jared Verse, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they played that same game. It's like that worked. So that's what we're going to do this year. But everybody else went to the NFL. So they played that same game with Daryl Jackson, Pat Payton. And those guys were even worse than the previous, like their price tag to come back and their attitude about everything, you know, DJ Lundy, et cetera, transferring out and you come back. I think that precedent of all that is part of what killed this thing and why it all fell apart so soon. Because like, I get it. You want to keep everybody. You don't want to have to go replace Daryl Jackson and Pat Payton out of the portal. You'd like to keep your program together, but you can't. What have you done? To hold us hostage. Yeah. Like, it's not like we're bringing you out of the portal. We're courting you. Like, you're part of the program. You're supposed to be one. So, Totally different. Totally different, you know, kind of outlook on that. So you got to get back to the beginning when, you know, you just try and go get whoever you want. And either if you're on the roster now, you either want to be a part of it or you don't. Like, right. Okay, if you're a Heisman candidate and you come back, or, you know, I guess Pat Payton's stats were somewhat inflated, but even the stats he had, they weren't sacks. No. And, you know, blowing up offensive linemen, it was jumping up and defending passes or, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I think – and they fixed that. You know, it was like 2 weeks into this thing. Mike just knew he effed up, and it is what it is. But yeah, I think we've, you know, kind of covered the most of it, of what they can do to get it right. Now it's just, you know, kind of time to wait and see what happens. I think we'll know – I think I will know in the next month whether – I believe this thing is going to work out, or if it's just a lame duck situation. But even in that, you know, again, look at Napier. Everybody thought that was a lame duck situation until now. All of a sudden, things are looking up. We will see.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you may have to have some tough conversations and let some guys walk this year. Yes. And I agree. I think the next month is the next month is gonna be crucial, because you'll know some of these hires. You'll know some of the names that they're flirting with in the portal. And so to close the show out, I'll just say this, man, and I'll get your opinion on this. I think if they do make good hires and they go out and they do well in the portal, they win 7-8 or more games next year, and we see progress in recruiting. I personally, I know people have this really overwhelming belief that Mike Norvell cannot fix this, that it will never rebound under Mike Norvell. I think if they do those things, now, again, the margin for error this offseason is razor thin. They cannot make any missteps, or this thing could go – it could implode on itself. I do think this season will exist in our minds forever. But I think if they do those things that we just talked about in this show, and they have a good 2025, which snowballs into 2026, I think we're back rolling. And I think this program will continue to be fine under Mike Norvell. Now, you may get three or four more years down the road, and you've gotten better, but you're not where you want to be, and you still have to make that change. But I think that if they nail this offseason and they have a good 2025 rolling going forward, I think this program can rebound. But again, like I said, man, the margin for error is razor thin, but I think it can happen. So give me some final thoughts on that, and we'll wrap this thing up.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, and I want it to happen. Like, that's why I want Dan Mullen so bad. Like, I legitimately think if you could get Mullen in here, there's like a 75% chance you could get this shit together. Excuse my language, dang it.
Well, you're fine. Cut that out, you're good.
But no, I absolutely believe they can. But I just, for me to believe it, I have to see the willingness to change.
Yeah.
Because what we've seen from Mike Norvell when he first got here in his first 3 years, no chance. No chance they can get it turned around, because it's going to take 3-4 years. And it's just not that kind of time. So kind of what I was talking about at the beginning, Mike is going to have to take some chances. He's going to have to go out there, take some chances with some coaches, some people, maybe a coach that he hasn't, you know, actually worked with before, as coaches like to do. Needs to take chances on kind of, you know, doing things on social media, whatever. You want to get a bunch of Lambos or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to do all that. But where they don't need to take chances on is the players they bring in. They need to bring in proven players with a track record, pay them whatever they want to get. And as far as the guys on this roster, it's either with us or not, you know, because what you put on film, it is what it is. If somebody's willing to give you $500,000 to go over here, go over there, see you later. Just let us know so we can figure out who we're going to get in here. I believe Mike can call plays and win games. I believe he can do everything that's necessary. But yeah, it's just going to take some differences. I want to see some swings, and that's basically it. We got 2 weeks till the end of the season. We'll see who he gets in here. If he brings in Craddock and a defensive coordinator that runs the 4-2-5 base and wants to run that shit on third downs too, I'm going to be really scared. So I guess that's the, I need to see an evolution like we've seen out of other coaches around the country, like Harbaugh, even though it was going back to his original kind of philosophy. That's why I'm all right with so high on the UNLV guy, because he's more run first than pass first. I think if you're going to this offense for playmakers, et cetera, there's just such a high variance of, like, if that's going to work out, hitting big plays, whether you get big plays or not. Like, I don't want to have to count on big plays next year to be able to win games. I want to be able to run the ball 30 times against a team that doesn't have your talent, shorten it, and just be able to win the game.
Right.
And that's something that, as you know, we've done the first 4 or 5 years, I don't think is really capable of happening. Unless you bring somebody in with that mindset, that's just going to have that mindset of toughness and running the ball. I watched Boston College have an elite O-line for 5 years with a bunch of zero stars, you know, it can be done, but what can't be done, what is hard to do, is that only a few teams can do every year is have elite offensive tackles that you can drop back and have 5 seconds to pass.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, that's the biggest thing for me. I want to see him go towards that run first, you know, run to set up the pass versus pass to set up the run type of offense. And some people say that's not true and that he wants to run the ball and all this stuff. I get it. He did it in 2022, but no, I always fall back on the thing with Lawrence Toofili this year. I just think it's a crime with how they did that and putting everything on Roydell Williams. And then even when Toofili proved to you he's far and away the best running back, you run him a couple times and go away from him. I want to see a willingness to stick with the hot hand, play tough, just hit you in the mouth football again at Florida State. And that's the biggest thing. I could even handle losing if everybody's bloody on both sides when they come off the field. But this, like you said, not showing the effort, going for it on fourth downs, making all these crazy, you know, trying to make big plays when you can't even complete a screen for, you know, 2 yards. Like,
I know.
That's it. Just get back to basics and just build out from there.
Yeah, I feel the same way, because I've said one of the worst parts about the season, it's not even fun to watch. Like, there's no big hits. There's no big plays. It's not even like the lost decade where every now and then you sneak up and win a big game, or you were, you know, knocking someone's tooth out or something like that. It's just there's nothing exciting about this. And I do agree. Like, even if you can get back to that like 2022 mentality where it's like, we're going to run the ball down your throat, and then we're going to play good defense behind it, and we're going to win some games. And that's what I would like to see them do. I don't want to see them win on some gimmicks. I want to see them win on hard-nosed football. And like you said, man, we'll know based on who they bring in. I don't think he can go and stand at the microphone and Michael Alford can go and stand at the microphone and say, we have names that you're going to recognize. We have all this interest and all this stuff from NFL top down, all that stuff. And then go bring in the Tulane OC or something like that. I just don't think that's going to be a big sell for this fan base. And I know, you know, that's it. You can't coach based on the fans, but these are your donors. This isn't the NFL. Like, you have to please your fans to a degree. So I think you got to make some splash hires, and I think you got to be willing to change some things. But yeah, man, I'm wholeheartedly with you. I just want to see things take a different direction next year. And then, like you said, even if it doesn't, I mean, you want to win games, but it's just got to look better. You got to look competent. You can't look
the team
like
you
have
to get better every week. Right. Versus getting bad. Like, you have to see a summit at the end of the, you know.
Yeah, it's gotten worse every week. And so you can't see this again next year. But we'll see, man. Only time will tell. It's going to be a very exciting couple of weeks coming up after the season is over, thankfully. Hopefully they get a win on Saturday, because if they don't win against Charleston Southern, they can all go. We can show them all the door for all I care. I know you feel the same way. But, George, man, I really appreciate you joining us for this one. I thought this was a great conversation. I hope everybody who watched this enjoyed this as well. Make sure you drop a like and subscribe to George's channel, The Renegade Report. Before we get out of here, George, let everybody know what you guys got going on over there, where they can find you on social media and everything going on with The Renegade Report right now.
Yeah, it's just like he said right here at YouTube. It's super easy to find. I was pretty lucky when I created that name, at The Renegade Report. You can just type in Renegade Report, Renegade, whatever, it'll pop up. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe. We're closing in on 3,000 subscribers. We do a live show every Tuesday and Friday at 7 Eastern. We also do the Voice of College Football post game after each game. It's also simulcast on the Renegade Report. And then on Monday, my co-host Jen Santee and Tiny Hat CEO have a show they do called The Renegade Roast, where just anybody can get it. It's more all of college football and just the funniest thing kind of from the sports week. Unfortunately, this year it's been all about Florida State because they're so bad. It's been a lot of Miami fans coming to troll us and stuff like that, but they have fun with it. Just come hang out. We'd like to get former players and all kinds of different people. We've had, you know, Brian McFadden, Jeff Colhane, Kenny Shaw, you know, Zach Smith. We've had pretty much you name it kind of people to get their kind of opinions on things. We're really open-minded, and I'll have a conversation, a debate with anyone. I agree with Jesse. This is one of the better conversations I had. I've He's been on the show, I don't know, a dozen times in the past couple of years. So thanks for having me on. I don't get to come on your show quite as much because your schedule is messed up. So I always appreciate it when I do, and I can't wait for this to come out and see how it does.
Definitely, man. I appreciate it because, you know, we're two of the ones we like to nerd out about Florida State football a little bit. And so that's why I thought this would be a really good conversation. We ran a little bit long, but like we said, man, I think we covered so much ground and I think everybody will enjoy it. I know you guys will enjoy the Renegade Report. You'll find me over there at times. Like George says, they have a lot of great guests. They do great with their live streams. So make sure you check that out. Follow them on X as well at Renegade Report One over there on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, drop a like and subscribe. We're closing in on 2,000. We're trying to get there. That would be a big goal for us. So you guys make sure you do that as well. Rate and review on the podcast and tell a friend. We appreciate that. Look, we're all suffering through this season together. We didn't ask for this. We didn't plan for this, but we're making it through together. So it'll be over before you know it, and then we'll have a lot to talk about this offseason. So again, guys, thanks for tuning in. George, thanks you for joining me, and we will catch you guys on the next one. As always, go Noles.